Welcome back into Super Bracket Bros. My name is Jay, your host and your personal bracketologist. And as always, sitting across from me, I have your speedy boy, Elias Stokes. How you doing today, Eli?
I'm a little sore. Well, see, the high school senior just beat the shit out of me and my entire class in a training session, so.
You know, it happens to the best of us, Eli.
I mean, it was all right, but he flew out of the ground naked and punched me in the face.
You know, these things, they tend to happen sometimes. I'm really sorry you had to go through that, but I'm sure you're a better person for it.
No.
You're much more prepared to take on the Yakuza now, I'm sure.
No!
Ignoring Eli's pleas for help, welcome to Super Bracket Bros. This is the podcast where we have taken 32 fictional characters, put them in a tournament against each other to see just who is the best of the best. And today, we are discussing Lemillion from the My Hero Academia universe, the number 2 seed, going up against a team. We have Dash and Violet Parr as the 7 seeds from the Incredibles universe. So, and we have a couple very special guests joining us today. We have, for the first time in Super Bracket Bros, we have two guests, and from a very similar-minded show, joining us from the Who Would Win cast, these two gentlemen have a podcast not unlike our own. Each week, they take two characters or more and put them in sort of not just a fictional fight, but a fictional scenario. Some of their various, you know, episodes include, you know, Pokemon in the Olympic Games, which lost characters would win a season of Survivor, and Dr. Doofenshmirtz versus Dr. Robotnik, the classic we all know and love. Next month, you can catch them. They're doing all listener appreciation episodes, so you're not going to want to miss that. That's the Who Would Win cast. So let's, without further ado, give a warm, very warm welcome to Steve and Chris. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing great. How are you doing?
Yeah, doing good. Thanks, guys.
Hey, we are doing well. We are very excited about today's episode. You know, I mean, me and Eli, we never give up a chance to talk about My Hero Academia, and, you know, the Incredibles universe is always a fun one to throw into the mix here.
Absolutely, yeah. I think Chris has a little more experience with My Hero Academia, but we can get into that when we talk about that later. But we've prepared for this. We have.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what your guys' experience is with that. But I'm just so our listeners get a little bit chance to know what you guys are all about. What would you suggest? What episode do you absolutely recommend our listeners go check out of yours?
So we've done over 110 episodes in the past 4 years, and I have two personal favorite episodes. Chris, do mine overlap with any of yours?
I think we both enjoy the cooking one a lot.
Okay, so why don't you talk about that one then?
So we did a Iron Chef episode where we chose chefs, right? Yep. They were both chefs?
Yeah, they're both chefs. I think one was Chef Carl Casper from the movie Chef, played by Jon Favreau. Mm. And then you had Preacher, played by LL Cool J and Deep Blue Sea. Yeah.
So we did totally randomized secret ingredient, and
just like the show.
Yeah, came up with a 3-course meal that we just made up on the spot,
right?
That fit their character.
And then in a later episode, we actually did an episode where we cooked that food live.
Oh my god!
Yeah, that was a lot of fun too.
Unfortunately, the audio isn't great on that one.
Yeah, it was tough because we were walking around a kitchen. Each of us were mic'd up, and it was very echoey. And we did the best that we could, but we seriously had to edit that because, I mean, it probably took us an hour and a half to cook all, because you were cooking like crab cakes and. Right? Weren't you cooking seafood?
I don't remember.
I made sandwich, because the secret ingredient was potato chips.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. Potato chips, yeah. Crab cakes, it all comes together.
Did you guys invite a food critic to sit down and just yell at
not
getting what you were cooking?
That would have made it way better.
That would have been way more realistic.
We had our wives taste it, and
and I think yours won the in-person vote, the online poll. I don't. It was kind of hard for people to vote on that one. We had pictures, but
oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not like you're gonna package it up in refrigerable like packages and send them out to all your
exactly
listeners.
Exactly. Here you go. Check it out. Kind of like Blue Apron kind of service. Yeah. Check it out. See what you think.
Who would win cast does Blue Apron. Yeah.
So
absolutely.
One of my other favorite episodes is right around the time last Transformers movie, the Michael Bay Michael Transformers movies came out. So it's like 2017. We did who would win of the transforming appliances. And what we had was we had our wives come up with random scraps of paper with random appliances on them. We had like a hot water heater, a dishwasher, an ice cream maker. And what we did was Chris and I just pulled them out of a hat and we had to say, all right, if this were to transform, what would it do? What would its weapons be? And we also had to come up with some creative names right on the spot. And like the dishwasher was called Sudsy. The hot water heater was called Steam Shot. Like they were perfect. They were fantastic. Oh, and then the cream of the crop. Do you remember what you called the ice cream maker?
The Lactaser.
Lactaser, yeah. So
that's
another great one. So I won't do more in case someone wants to go out and listen to that. But yeah, that's around 2017. Yeah.
Couldn't recommend it more. So another question I want to start asking all our guests is, you know, each of you guys, I think we'll start with Steve here, but, you know, do you have a favorite fictional character of all time?
So I'm kind of going to cheat. I'm tied between two that I really, really love. One of which is Obi-Wan Kenobi. I just love him as a mentor, educator character. I'm a teacher myself, so I just love that, you know, want to share knowledge, characteristics that he has. I actually named my first cat after him. He's named Obi. And then second is Indiana Jones, which was actually the name of my first cat growing up. Her name was Indy. So I guess I have a thing with naming my pets after my favorite fictional
characters.
That's
why you got cats, isn't it?
That's exactly why. Exactly. Yeah. Did you come up with yours, Chris?
It's also very hard for me to pick a favorite. I to steal a Star Wars reference, I always loved Luke Skywalker growing up.
Yeah.
I saw A New Hope when I was pretty young and just loved it. It was my favorite movie.
Right.
Watched it a ton of times. I like him as like a pure hero type, like a pure good for the most part.
Until The Last Jedi.
I that's one of the reasons me and Steve argue endlessly over this. I dislike The Last Jedi a lot because of the characterization of Luke Skywalker personally. But if you like it, totally fine. I have no issues with that. But I liked Luke Skywalker a lot. I like the idea of like a hero with the like overcoming a lot of like self-doubt to become great.
And right.
So two things I want to know here. First, I can 100% appreciate naming your pets after characters you love. I genuinely picked the cat that I have now because his name was Star-Lord.
Oh, perfect.
So trust me, I get it. And then secondly, I was going to say we could just ditch the entire premise this episode and have a debate about The Last Jedi if you guys want it.
It may end me and Steve's friendship.
He likes The Last Jedi. Thanksgivings are going to get real awkward.
Oh, for more reasons than just The Last Jedi, I would assume.
Oh, yeah.
Given the state of the world.
Yes, exactly.
Let's get into today's topic. So you guys are primarily joining us as being familiar with Dash and Violet Parr in the Incredibles universe. So let's talk about Dash and Violet Parr first. So just to give a quick bio about who they are the son and daughter of Robert and Helen Parr and the older siblings to the youngest of the family, Jack-Jack. These five superheroes make up the Incredibles family. Dash, at 10 years old, is the speedster, and Violet, at 14 years old, has the invisibility and force field projection powers. Throughout the course of two movies, this duo regularly hold their own against the forces of villainy and resist the societal banishment of supers. They made their debut in the 2004 film The Incredibles, which won Academy Awards for Best Animated Feature and Best Sound Editing. Their only other major appearance was the 2018 sequel Incredibles 2, which would be nominated for Best Animated Feature. And I found it interesting doing research that like they've appeared in other shorts and things and other video games, but I was really surprised to see that there wasn't some huge, expansive like comic book series done on The Incredibles. It really seems like ripe for that kind of thing, especially given what Disney is up to these days.
Yeah, I completely agree. I wish they would.
Yeah, it really seems like a no-brainer. And so I think it's interesting that they've just stuck with the two movies, which they have talked about a potential third, you know, hopefully not in another, what is it, 12 years
yeah,
from now,
right, but exactly.
get another Dash voice actor in there. Yeah. But We'll see. But behind the scenes a little bit, the director of both movies was Brad Bird, who you might also know from The Iron Giant, Ratatouille, and Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. He was also the voice of Edna Mode in the Incredible movies and the short films. Speaking of Dash voice actors, in the first one, it was Spencer Fox, who you might also maybe recognize from Air Buddies or Kim Possible, but he's actually currently a member of the power pop band Charlie Bliss. He's a vocalist and a guitarist.
Huh.
In Incredibles 2, we have Huck Milner, born in 2008, 4 years after the release of the first film. This was Huck's first professional acting performance. Prior to this experience, he had been in several musicals and plays through New York's Children's Acting Academy. And then quickly, just to chat about Violet's voice actress, we have Sarah Vowell. She has portrayed Violet in both films. She's had various minor TV roles, but today she's primarily a writer, having contributed to articles in Esquire, the New York Times, and the LA Times. She has also written several books, her most recent being Lafayette and the Somewhat United States. But let's focus on these characters for a minute here. So just to lay our cards out on the table, me and Eli, we've both chatted about The Incredibles before. Last season, we had Mr. Incredible on before he fell to Aquaman, I believe, in the second round. So, Steve, Chris, what is your experience with The Incredibles?
So, this movie actually came out on my 12th birthday, exactly.
Did you see it?
I remember seeing it in theaters with my grandmother, and I really, really liked it. And this is my dad's favorite Pixar movie. He always talks about this one. And then like when it was announced that Brad Bird was directing Mission Impossible, my dad was like, oh my God, we got to go see that. And that movie's fantastic too. And then when the sequel came out 2 years ago, we all went as a family, to go see that just because that was his favorite. And I love The Incredible. I think it's one of the best Pixar movies.
I really enjoy them too. I really like superhero stories. I like it in the Pixar universe.
Mm-hmm.
I saw both in theaters as well.
And it was a superhero movie in 2004. So that was before, I mean, X-Men were popular, Spider-Man was popular, but this was before the MCU. Batman Begins hadn't come out yet. So Disney was kind of ahead a little bit with the huge superhero wave that was going to come shortly after.
Yeah. And to introduce an entire superhero universe, not just a superhero, like obviously you have like the main Incredibles, but it came with Frozone, it came with an entire litany of superheroes that they introduced in that, and like the villains and everything like that. Like it was really like one of the things that I'm sure like slowly got the ball rolling on superhero culture that we have today.
Yeah, I agree.
I would agree too.
Yeah.
You know, bringing it back to, you know, who we're talking about today, what do you guys think, you know, what makes Dash and Violet Parr special as the Parr kids?
Do you want to talk about one and I'll take the other?
Sure. So we actually kind of split this up amongst the two of us. So I was going to be taking on Violet, and
wait, seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's what I said. Yeah, I did Dash.
So when I was researching Violet, there was one thing that I found, and I think a lot of listeners might think, oh, well, that was their intention. But when you first meet Violet, she is very reserved, and she hides behind her hair. It's kind of covering her face there, and which is kind of what like a 13, 12-year-old teenager might do in school, who's very shy, and that kind of goes really well with her ability to turn invisible and to kind of hide. And then also, too, with her next ability, when it comes to making force fields, that just really goes with also trying to hide as well, to keep people away who you don't want to hurt you, which I think is very common for not only young girls that age, but young teens. And when you talk about Dash also, I think just all the characters, I think their powers just really go well with who they are as characters. Like we can call her Alasta Woman, hashtag feminism. She's the mom. So she's always going in a million different directions, trying to take care of the kids. And that allows her to stretch and go all over the place. But especially with Violet, I just think that, she's a really strong character. I think the voice acting is phenomenal. And I think she's the best Sue Storm we've ever seen on film, because that's basically what she is.
Yeah, that was the other thing I noticed. Like, I mean, the parallels to the Fantastic Four are like as obvious as the hand in front of my face right now. Like it really doesn't, you know, get any more obvious than that.
I don't know if Dash is a you had some very good insights on Violet, her personality related to her superpowers. Dash is just classic super speed character. He's younger than Violet. He's the, I guess, the middle in the family, but
I wouldn't be surprised if he had like ADHD or something, just because that would like hyper,
he's a hyper kid.
Yeah.
It was actually really lucky they named him Dashiell, right? Because do they have their powers like since they're born?
Violet, ultraviolet.
Yeah, exactly. The naming of the children is a little on the nose, I thought. And actually, I did not know until today that Dash's full name was Dashiell.
Yeah, they say it in the movie a couple times.
I think the mom says it once or twice, basically. As
I think her name. I think his full name is like Dashiell. She goes Dashiell Robert Parr.
Yes, that is his full name.
There you go.
Yeah, I did not catch it. It must have been a while since I fully watched the first Incredibles movie, but I watched parts of the second one today in preparation. And when he puts in his voice command in the Incredicar, and he says Dashiell Parr or Dashiell Robert Parr, and I was like, wait a second there.
What?
Dashiell Robert Parr. And like I did not catch that for the longest time, and I thought it was hilarious.
Someone also pointed out to me Jack-Jack, because you're like, what's Jack-Jack's name for? Someone said he's a jack of all trades, which I think fits, because he can do like everything.
Wow.
You know,
you're absolutely right.
So I think in the Incredibles universe, I think that whatever you're named, that's what your superpower turns into be, it seems.
What is Eli then?
You are named after the greatest Giants quarterback in the history of forever.
How does that feel, Eli? Are you going to be able to survive that?
I mean, I'm happy with the two Super Bowl rings, but
I mean, honestly, Eli, it fits. Like, you're the much less impressive younger brother of somebody else.
Hey, I thought we were getting personal with this, man.
You're right. I'm sorry. Specifically before we hit record, I did say no personal jabs for the first time ever before we hit record, I said that. And of course I say that.
I want you to know I'm pouting like Eli Manning would on the sideline right now.
I'm sure your brother's somewhere with a very red forehead. Don't worry.
I think we need to do like an NFL spinoff or something.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Eli, do you have anything to say, you know, necessarily about these characters that really makes them stand out to you?
I think you guys both hit it on the head. One thing, I watched a review of the movie, and somebody pointed out an interesting thing about Dash's character. You know, he's kind of a headache for the parents, for the whole family, and part of the reason of that is because superheroes are banned, is that he has no outlet to express his speedsterness, essentially, so that's sort of why he acts out. And sort of similar with Violet, you know, she's super reserved because she lives in a society that looks down upon super. So it's interesting that Pixar was wise enough to show the effects of the society on the kids through, you know, Dash's rambunctious nature and Violet's, you know, shyness. I thought that was very interesting, you know, world building and character study.
Yeah, it's interesting how they just take these all like, you have like a little bit of the X-Men where you have, you know, societal pressures against them, and then you have a little bit of Fantastic Four, you know, because of like obviously the powers are inspired by that and the family dynamics. So there's just like a little bit from all these different universes that really makes the Incredibles unique, I think.
Ow, Dash. You have something you want to tell your father about school?
Well, we dissected a frog.
Dash got sent to the office again.
Good, good.
No, Bob, that's bad.
What?
Dash got sent to the office again.
What? What for?
Nothing.
He put a tack on the teacher's chair during class.
Nobody saw me. I could barely see it on the tape.
They caught you on tape and you still got away with it? Whoa! You must have been booking. How fast do you think you were going?
We are not encouraging this.
I'm not encouraging. I'm just asking how fast you...
Honey! So, how about you, Vi? How was school?
Nothing to report.
You've hardly touched your food.
I'm not hungry for meatloaf.
Well, it is leftover night. We have steak, pasta. What are you hungry for?
Tony Ridinger.
Shut up.
Well, you are.
I said shut up, you little insect.
Well, she is.
Do not shout at the table. Honey?
Kids, listen to your mother.
She'd eat if we were having Tony loaf.
That's it.
Let's move on to the other character that we have to chat about today. So, Eli, you ready to talk about Lemillion?
He's the best boy. So, yes.
He is indeed the best boy. And so, Chris and Steve, I'm kind of curious, what are your experiences with My Hero Academia, if any?
Chris, do you want to admit, or not even admit, but just open up to what you've been doing for the past?
No, I'm a fan of anime in general. I've always heard My Hero Academia is a pretty good one. Never got around to watching it. But when you guys invited us to be on, I did start. So I'm in season two right now. So I think it's in,
nice.
At least, I don't know what's on, what it's currently up to. I think there's four seasons on Crunchyroll right now.
Yes.
Is that current with?
Yes. Yeah. I believe season four ended this year. Which was Lemillion's season, which he made his first appearance.
Yeah. So that is the other thing. Being only a quarter of the way through season two, didn't even meet that character yet. So me and Steve did watch two episodes.
Yes.
So kind of get to meet
to
him.
Get to know him a little bit. Because I am not, I'm going to say I'm not a huge fan of anime. I've just never really got into it. When I was younger, I watched like Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh!, which I don't know if that constitutes as anime. I don't really know. I just watched all of Avatar The Last Airbender for the first time, which I know is like American anime. Really, really enjoyed that. I think my hardest part, especially when we were watching today, is I love to read, but I have a really hard time reading subtitles and also watching what's going on the screen personally. Like I know you like watching shows with subtitles on normally.
I have mixed feelings because I do like to hear the original voice actors,
right?
But it is distracting to have to read, especially when they have multiple people talking and they split a subtitle, yes, like the top and bottom.
And they're also putting, and you can correct me if I did not understand this, were they putting like graphics on of like their like stats at times? Okay, yes, so I was curious when they, because the stats would be translated on top of the screen in English. So I was reading that and I was like, wait, what are they talking about that? And then I'm like, oh, I just missed what that guy said. And so, but no, I mean, the two episodes that we watched, I thought it was really cool. I thought Chris explained the premise to me before we started watching. And I thought the premise was a really cool idea. I thought it was really interesting.
I'm into it.
And it's called a quirk, right? Their powers? Is that what it's called?
Yes, that's what they...
Like the whole thing with the quirk, and there was the one kid who didn't have any quirks, and then he like inherited a quirk from a guy who could... Right, like bequeath his...
I had to give
quirks.
Steve a very quick summary. He's doing really well, though, for how much I told him.
He is, absolutely. Okay, Me and Eli, we've talked plenty about My Hero over the course of last season and this season. We have three My Hero characters, and this is the third one we've talked about just in the last, 10 episodes or so. But that was a perfect, like, perfect explanation. You know, My Hero Academia is a world where nearly everybody has a quirk, except for one really sad kid and one, like, really, who's a really big fanboy, and sure enough, that really awesome hero gives him his quirk. And so it's all about his story. But one of the characters we meet along the way is Lemillion. And he's actually another student like Midoriya is, that, and he's one of UA High School's big three. You know, he's one of the, like, one of the strongest potential heroes, and, you know, is often cited as possibly, you know, being the number one hero as soon as he graduates from UA High School. And so he's definitely like an extremely talented character. And let's talk about his quirk for a second. It's called Permeation. Mirio can phase his body through physical matter. It's noted in the series that this quirk is very difficult to control, which makes his determination to be a hero and his goal to save at least a million people during his life that much more admirable. Mirio would go on to lose his quirk after the events of the Hisaki raid, unfortunately, but despite this, through his indomitable will, he continues to fight and work towards becoming a hero. And it's also worth noting, we're obviously not using Lemillion without his without his abilities. I don't think that'd be a very fun discussion.
I do understand that reference, because we saw that happen today, right?
We saw that episode.
He got shot with that bullet that, like X-Men Last Stand took his powers away kind of thing.
Exactly. Mm, cool. Yeah, that you understood that 100%.
I think we should do a spin-off podcast about My Hero Academia.
And actually, for for not watching anything else in season four, I was very drawn to the character and totally felt like a lot of emotions when he makes that sacrifice to save that girl.
Me too. I thought that was really like admirable. And when they were showing the flashbacks of him as a kid, Right? They were showing flat. You're looking at me like I was watching different. Yeah, okay, yeah. Just making sure. and because you're like, well, if it goes through him, because like bullets.
If they had just shot him, he lets that thing go through.
Goes right through him, and then it hits the girl that he was protecting.
Yeah.
So then he takes the shot, and it was really well done.
It's just like, I love Lemillion. And so, like, to hear you guys, like, you've just seen two episodes of him, and to, like, talk about how great he is just, like, melts my heart inside. Just, like, oh, my God.
Or does it phase your heart?
Like he
does?
Yeah.
Oh, hey.
like, Lemillion, like Eli said, is best boy. Like, he is just, like, what, like, he is so good that, like, he just wants, like, to do whatever is best as possible, you know, and so, like, he just proves that over and over and time again, and really is a role model for the protagonist of the series. His first appearance was chapter 121 of the manga, episode 62 of the anime, where he's shown under the Night Eye Agency, which you guys probably didn't catch, but, you know, like, that doesn't matter too much, you know, context-wise. Just a little bit behind the scenes, he was voiced in the Japanese version by Tarusuke Shingaki. He has various video game roles, including Pokken Tournament, Street Fighter, but his most prominent role comes from Ghost in the Shell, actually. His English voice actor was Rico Fajardo. He has various roles in anime that include Assassination Classroom, The Heroic Legends of Arslan, Absolute Duo, and many, many others. Eli, I just want to give you a second to just talk about why Lemillion's great and why he's best boy.
As you were mentioning, Jay, like, Lemillion, he's just like, he embodies the spirit of My Hero Academia so perfectly. You know, he wants to be a hero for nothing more than because it's the right thing to do. And also to improve himself, you know, as we alluded to, as Steve and Chris alluded to in the flashback, you see him, he's sort of the runt of the classroom. He has this quirk that's kind of laughed at, scoffed at, and he's sort of made fun of, but he never stops because he wants to achieve his dream. And, you know, that is just so, like, plus ultra, you know? And so I think the moment that made Lemillion my favorite character was that sacrifice, because throughout the series, he always says, like, his name is Lemillion. I'm going to save a million people, but he sacrifices everything to save one person.
Right.
You know, it's so beautiful. I love Mirio is just, you know, he's a great role model. He's an amazing character. Like, you know, Steve and Chris only saw two episodes of him and they love him. So that's just a testament to how great of a character he is. And he's definitely my favorite character from that show, which I enjoy very much.
Could I ask you a favor to give us a little extra background on him? So I believe from reading, there's an episode where he fights the 1A class, the younger class. Is that right?
Yeah. That's like the second episode that he's in, I believe.
Okay. Yeah. I couldn't find that one when I was looking, and I was just wondering if you could give us a quick summary of maybe like the battle tactics he used in that fight. It seems like even though he is more experienced and very qualified with his quirk, that class that he fights is also fairly reputable for, but maybe not. I don't know what happened in that fight.
That's sort of to show how they're like, it's said many times how skilled class 1A is, and so it's a testament to Mirio that he just dunks on them. So
he takes on probably 18 out of 20 of them. You know, it doesn't include a couple of the most powerful members of the class, but like all of them have like faced many like villains beyond their years, you know, like they have all, you know, been tested quite a bit, and Mirio just comes in their practice and just absolutely whoops up on all of them, including the protagonist who has like the most powerful quirk, you know. So like he just like phases, and we'll talk about his tactics, you know, during the fight and stuff, but he just like, he just straight like phases through his clothes straight into the ground, like, and just disappears into nothingness and pops up behind them and like takes half of them out before they've even realized what's happened, and then proceeds to like just bounce between them, like, and launching himself from wall to wall, because how his quirk works is once he takes up once he's in the floor or in a wall or something, then he just deactivates his quirk and it like shoots him out of that matter, because that matter can't take up the same space at the same time, so he just gets absolutely launched. So he uses that to his advantage as well.
There's a character who's like, That sounds like a cheat code. And like, he's like, I know, right? It's awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely acknowledged. And like him explaining his own quirk and talking about training and stuff. And like the thing that made Mirio want to be a hero was he was actually saved as a young child because he just accidentally phased straight through a bridge down into a river. And, you know, like, and fell into this river and was saved by a hero. And, you know, ever since then, that's what's inspired him to do his best and to control his quirk. And it's really very admirable, you know, what Lemillion and what Mirio wants to do with his power. But hopefully that kind of answers your question. But did you guys have anything else you want to talk about with Lemillion?
No, I don't.
That's pretty much the sum total of knowledge we have of Lemillion. So.
Yeah.
Excuse me, gentlemen, but we need to talk.
You shouldn't have been able to get here so fast.
I took a shortcut. Give me the girl.
Now that you know the situation, you've decided to play hero, eh, schoolboy?
That's why I'm here.
I'm not getting through to you. Allow me to be clearer. You're going to die down here.
I won't waver! I'm going to make sure she has a reason to smile! Until she can, I won't stop!
No, that is perfect. And really, you know, we'll get into the fight, but I think that's about all you need to know. And I think we're going to have an interesting discussion here. But I just want to quickly outline the rules of the fight. This is a fight to incapacitation, whether it be death, trapping, unconscious, or forcible battlefield removal. We take these characters as they are, morals, ethics, and everything included. But we do indeed make them fight, but just not necessarily to the death. This is not, we're not bloodlusting these characters. But these characters start face to face to each other. Yeah. About 25 meters from each other, knowing they're going into a fight. But last but not least, we have to decide where this battle is going to take place. We have 100 pre-selected historical, fictional, and real-life locations to pick from. So let me pull out our random number generator.
Please be a Chick-fil-A. Please be a Chick-fil-A. Please be a Chick-fil-A. Please be a Chick-fil-A.
You know what? It's not Chick-fil-A, but Chick-fil-A is on the list now. So have you guys ever played Super Mario Galaxy?
Oh, it's been a while, but a little.
We're going to Gateway Galaxy, and Gateway Galaxy is the very first world that you show up on as Mario, and it's sort of, it's just a planet, but it's, you can run around it in, you know, perhaps a couple dozen steps.
Okay.
So this is taking place on a ball, actually. So for lack of a better term, but nothing too distinct here. It's in the middle of space, so there's no weather or time to be worried about. But yeah, so that'll be interesting to see how that comes in. Anybody got any questions about that?
Oh, we pulled up a picture to see.
We're screwed. I
was hoping for a body of water, personally. I was really hoping a body of water would be...
Yes, body of water would be
but
good.
I don't see one. Is that sound right to you guys? There's no water on this? No,
I don't...
Not that I'm aware of. It's a pretty small little planetoid, if I'm remembering
it's kind of just like a garden with a hut.
Yeah, there's a couple huts, a couple rabbits. I don't know how they survive, but space rabbits, I don't know.
So this is going to be Lemillion versus Dash and Violet Parr in the Mario universe. But that's definitely what I thought we were going to be talking about today. Anyways, let's get into the fight, shall we?
Let's do it.
We pull Lemillion out of the My Hero Academia universe. We pull Dash and Violet Parr out of Incredibles 2 and into this, our small planetoid. How does this fight break off?
I think Mario says something very positive and encouraging.
Oh, he'll compliment their suits, absolutely, right?
Yeah, he probably would like the color schemes. They are a red color,
and I mean he's got his whole outfit on, so I think he would appreciate the uniform, right? And I think Dash would see Lemillion's and go, that's awesome. Where I think Violet, Violet would just be kind of indifferent, not like she
Although
hates it
he is
but...
like a cute older guy,
so she might be into him, right? But I don't know. I don't know if she would like look at his suit and be like, "I want that suit," kind of thing. I think you're right.
Kind of has a unique face in the My Hero Academia
universe.
Yes,
he does.
Like his eyes are just circles.
Yeah.
And
I was about to say, how does she react to Tintin? Basically,
that's exactly what it is. I couldn't put my finger on that. Yes, I could. I'm like, he looks like something I've seen before. Yes.
But he has the rippling muscles, so I think that probably is enough.
But I don't know, because in the Incredibles universe, she likes that Tony Dillinger, Rockinger, whatever his name is, and he's like a stick.
That is true, yeah.
So I don't know if her type is, yeah, right.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. You know, like, I think she's definitely going to be suspicious, yeah, especially at his way overwhelming positivity. I don't think she's going to be
actually,
about
yeah, that. I think he's so such a cornball. Violet will just be like, yeah.
You're like my dad.
Never mind.
Especially as soon as Dash starts fanboying out, like, she's not going to want to have anything to do with this
right,
guy.
Right, exactly.
Who makes the first move here in this fight?
I think Dash.
I'm leaning towards Dash.
Yeah.
He's cocky in general.
Super cocky in general.
He is a speedster. He just wants to run.
I think he would just like speed up to him.
I think he goes straight at him.
He just goes straight at him. Kind of like what he was doing with that teacher in his class, how he would do something and then run back to his seat really quick. And like, you wouldn't even see it. He would do something like that, whether he would poke him or if, I don't know if he would go right in for a punch, but I think he would try. Yeah. He would go right at him. And now the question is that moving at the speed that Dash can, cause Lemillion can correct me if I'm wrong, cause I'm not an expert. Can he pick and choose when an object goes through him or does it? I guess he must.
Yeah,
right?
It seemed like it from the fight. Like he could even pick what part of his body it seemed like.
Right.
Yes, exactly. So he could, if Dash just goes for a punch to the abdomen, say, like Lemillion can just make his abdomen permeable. So
right.
Like the punch could go straight through him, but
would he see it coming?
Exactly.
Right.
You know, like he's not going to know what Dash's deal is. Like, I mean, like maybe he can inference from like the swooped back hair, like, and like, oh, your name is Dash. Okay.
I wonder what you can do.
And so like maybe he sees it coming, but yeah, like at some point, so like say Dash gets the immediate upper hand, like he just a jab straight to Mirio's, you know, 8-pack or whatever he's got going on under there. And then like if he comes back for another punch, you know, what is the Dash reaction to a punch going straight through Mirio's stomach? Like just like does he think like, oh, he's nothing, I just obliterated him?
I think Dash would be really taken back.
I don't think he's like a, I was going to say smart. He's not a dumb character,
right.
But he's not the thinker of the family.
Yeah.
He probably wouldn't know what was going on. He probably puts all his might into the punch, whiffs, trips, rolls around on the ground.
All the way around the planet.
Yeah.
It would be interesting to see their reaction. And Mirio, I think like he's going to take a more like not reserved approach, but you know, he's going to deduce their powers, figure out what their deal is, and I think, you know, Dash doesn't, you know, really, you know, take a second to be able before he figures out what Dash's deal is. What is Violet doing during these shenanigans?
I'll give my thoughts real quick.
Yeah, sure.
I think personally the best move for Violet is to go invisible right away.
Okay.
Try to lose Mirio so that he can't track her.
Would you want him?
He's such a skilled fighter. He might be able to watch for footsteps or listen. So I think Violet would have to rely on Dash distracting him enough that he'll lose track of an invisible Violet.
So that was my question. Do you think Violet would try to go invisible without a million seeing it happening? So that way he doesn't even know that she turned invisible. Like he just thought she's hiding or something.
That would be nice if it could.
Right.
He's very skilled. He probably would notice.
Okay.
Yeah, because a big thing in the My Hero universe is quirk identification. That's like one of the first things you learn as a hero. So he's sparsing out like, okay, Speedster, where's the girl? I can't see her. Okay, that's probably an invisibility quirk or something. So I'm sure he's like calculating all of this while the Incredibles are setting up.
I agree.
Yeah, I think so too. So, you know, what is like, and now what does Lemillion do? What is his strategy going forward against these two opponents that are, you know, wildly different?
That's just his power is so like it has so much utility, you know? Like, he could phase into the ground if he needs to bug out for a second to get his bearings. Like, he could phase out when oncoming attacks to evade. So I think he's going to try and keep Dash occupied, and then I think try to figure out where Violet is.
Yeah, I could see him sort of taking his time with Dash and, you know, like, figuring out. I feel like Dash is sort of the type that could fall into a pattern. Like, okay, I'm going to attack from this angle, and then this angle, and then rinse and repeat, sort of. And, like, each time Lamillion's going to get better at phasing out that part of his body. And at some point, I think if Dash comes at him enough times, Lamillion will drop straight down into the ground and then be able to time an uppercut perfectly on Dash.
And I think Dash would, I think he'd be taken back at first, just being punched in the face like that, because I think that happens in The Incredibles when he's fighting that one, like, bad guy that's in, like, the flying saucer thing, and Dash is, like, punching him and just punching him and punching him, and then the guy gets one in on Dash, and Dash kind of is, like, shaken up a little bit, like, whoa, like, that adult just hit a child. So
this is a Pixar movie. That's not supposed to happen.
Dash is 10 years old.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, that's like pure child abuse right there. I mean, Syndrome, I mean, he's got to have a really good, you know, insurance policy if he's letting his employees do that to kids. But
I think he needs a better cape policy before anything.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So I think if Dash would be completely shooken by that. I really think he would, because if he's getting a couple hits in on Lamillion pretty quick, like he is, if Lamillion doesn't see it coming and he's not able to phase out or whatever, so Dash doesn't get him. Once Lamillion gets a hit on Dash, which I absolutely think he would, I think Dash would just be so shooken up, and he'd be like sitting on the ground shaking his head like, what just happened? Probably looking for Violet, which she would be invisible at that point, and she wouldn't want to, you know, show her cards yet if she's hiding out.
Yeah. Is this the point where Violet steps in and puts a shield over Dash to protect him, or, you know, like, runs up to him and puts a shield over both of them to stop Lamillion from coming in on them?
Potentially. And we were talking about this before we even started recording, that how do you guys feel about Lamillion being able to phase through her force fields?
So, like you guys, this is something I've thought about. I'm sure, Eli, you have too. I personally would think that he would not be able to phase through the force fields.
That's how we felt,
really,
too.
We were leaning towards that. It specifically says he phases through solid matter.
Physical matter.
Physical matter, is that, yeah, what the description says?
The description said physical matter. So, I mean, I'm not a scientist, so I don't know if a force field would indicate.
We don't really know what her force field is made of, do we?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I'm willing to say that it's, like, it's energy-based.
That's what,
like,
I was going
to say. Like, it's a projection,
yeah,
that she creates.
So, yeah.
So, like, I thought about it like this. There is one character, one or two characters from the My Hero universe that can use shields, and Eli can back me up on this. But if I think about Mirio versus those characters, I don't think Mirio would be able to phase through the shields that they produce.
No, I don't think so either. However, so I thought, my first thought was not phasing through the shield, because, yeah, I don't think he'll be able to do that, but he could phase through the ground.
Yes.
And then pop up within the shield?
Yeah, if she's only has, like, a dome up, and it isn't covering, like, the whole, you know, a whole sphere, then I think he could, you know, he'll probably be like, oh, I can't go through that. Oh, wait a second. You know?
So now she is able to, I don't think I'm wrong, but I think she is able to make her force fields levitate. I don't think they have to be on the ground, if I'm not mistaken.
They definitely don't have to be on the ground. I feel like we see them more often,
yes,
on the ground,
yes,
but they're definitely, like, specifically I'm thinking about the first movie where, like, she creates in a ball and she's holding the shield together while Dash is pushing them forward.
Right.
I'm specifically thinking about, like, that is, like, concrete, like, you're, like, she can create it above ground. So if she did that, Lamillion would not be able to get in immediately anyway.
So that's what I would think she would do. I don't think she would put a force field around her and Dash. I think at that point she would put one around him and, like, levitate it, and he would be basically stuck in the force field. Now, her force field abilities, I haven't seen the second movie since it came out in theater, so I don't remember if it's as strong.
There is a limit to her, how long she can hold the field.
Okay.
The other thing we have to keep in mind is that she might not necessarily know fully how his power works. So we're arguing it because we know.
Right, that's true.
And right, maybe, so, right, maybe so, she doesn't figure that out right away.
Yeah, okay, so she would put it over top of him, be like, all right, I'm going to keep this guy stuck in the force field. And then like Jay said, he would just be like, awesome, there's the ground. I'm just going to go straight through it.
See, that's the thing. I think she does the same thing that Dash did, where like gets him once, but then like very quickly figures out like what he's capable of, and he comes down, pops through the ground, gets a good hit in. But I don't think she makes that mistake again. And I think, you know, this is sort of another conversation I want to have. Like, is her trapping Mirio in a shield, is that worth anything?
Right, because I feel like the Million's probably strong enough to eventually just punch through it. Because there are a couple instances in Incredibles,
yes,
where her force field is broken by overwhelming strength.
Right? Yes.
And we've seen Mirio, you know, he's physically strong. He's not just reliant on his quirk. He can, you know, he has that strength probably to burst that bubble, like you said.
I think eventually, I think certainly she can hold him for a long time. I'm kind of wondering, but I it's not indefinitely, and I don't think it's long enough to get them a win, because like Mirio would still like be able to pop out and be ready to fight.
What about this? They're in a low gravity environment. They bubble Mirio and then just like hit him out of the ring.
Lamillion or Dash just starts to run loops around the planet and just like start building momentum, and then just
he creates
like
a twister.
Yeah, like grabs a toad on the way and uses him as a baseball bat and launches Lamillion trapped in Violet's sphere. Oh, Lamillion gets maybe a handful of punches. He took out Class 1A like practically one punch each and knocked them out. I give Dash and Violet par. I think they've experienced a little bit more, and I'll give them the durability that their suits give them, which is, you know, I mean, their suits are bulletproof. So like if it's not a direct hit, like I don't think it's going to necessarily knock them out. But like I think Lamillion, it's just going to take a handful of punches to render them unconscious and come out with the win here. I'm having a hard time thinking about ways in which Dash and Violet par, the ways they offensively overcome Lamillion's durability.
I would completely agree with that. I think the kids don't have the durability Lamillion has. I think we have to basically rely on somehow like a force multiplier by maybe, like we were talking about, Dash running around the planet a lot to build up speed and run into him. Violet projecting the force fields at him.
Right. Her learning that she can't put it around him with it connected to the ground because he'll just go through it.
It's so tricky. Even if Violet and Dash get Mirio on the ropes, you know, the whole thing with My Hero Academia is plus ultra. So even if Mirio's, you know, he's getting caught in a web or something, we've seen just sheer brute force, you know, solve so many problems. I always tell My Hero Academia is the show where they just shove a square peg through a round hole. And so I think he could be able to...
Perfect description.
During this conversation, I could see all these scenarios, especially in this environment, where Dash and Violet can come up with a very interesting strategy to get Mirio off his game. But, you know, that doesn't matter in My Hero. You know, it's just a sheer force sometimes. You know, might makes right. So, yeah, I love throwing in that analogy because My Hero Academia is so funny in that mm-hmm. regard. So,
yeah,
I do completely agree with that. I would say as a counterpoint, they are brother and sister. I think if one of them saw the other in trouble, they do maybe get a burst of extra energy to try to help their sibling.
Right.
True.
And that's why they're a team in this tournament, right? But I think we're rounding down to make some decisions here. Just to remind our listeners how we decide winners on Super Bracket Bros is each of us will give an out of 10 of how confident we are in each of these fighters, but each of us still gets one vote on who we think should move on in this tournament. So Eli, if you want to start things off for us here.
Sure. I think we've had a very fun conversation. I love imagining all the tricks Violet and Dash can bring up. They are a team. They're a brother-sister combo that we've seen in the movies. You know, they hate each other. well, hate each other insofar as siblings right. can in the movies, but, you know, they learn to work together, and that unity in a family, I think, is extremely powerful and something that can't, it's difficult to overcome. And I think it shines in this fight, but it's just so hard facing off against a character like Mirio, who he has more experience, more professional experience. His power, you know, is, he's made it such exceptionally powerful. And, you know, I think it comes down to just the sheer might. Like, I don't think if Violet and Dash had a good finishing move, I might lean more in their favor, but I don't think they have the ability to just KO Mirio like he does to them. So I'm going to go with Mirio. I'm going to go with Lemillion 8 out of 10 times, but it's just fun speculating all the force field shenanigans that'll play with. So I like to give Dash and Violet 2 wins, but yeah, I go Lemillion 8.
You think that finishing move is putting a laser-enabled Jack-Jack in their arms, sending them off to fight?
Oh, God. Jack-Jack's a one seed.
Steve, do you want to go ahead?
I was also going to say 8 out of 10 to Lemillion, but maybe just since we had the side of Violet and Dash, I'll say 7.5 times out of 10 to Lemillion, just to give the par siblings that extra 0.5. Yeah, like I said, I mean, today's the first time I've ever watched any episodes of the show, but from what I could see, his powers seemed very unmatched, especially in regards to what Dash and Violet are bringing. They do have some exceptional abilities, definitely, but when going up to Lemillion, it's gonna be an uphill battle or a roundhill battle.
he stole the words out of my mouth. Chris, do you want to go ahead?
Like you guys, also was gonna go 8 out of 10 Lemillion. In solidarity with my co-host, I will knock that to a 7.5. I do think a lot of Dash and Violet's strategies and chance of winning will rely on them having an optimal strategy from the beginning, because they won't have very long before Lemillion is, he doesn't need much to take him out, and they don't know anything about him. I don't know if they're going to have time to figure out the optimal strategy before they're done.
Yeah.
So that's why I gave him some wins, but I think Lemillion beats him most of the time.
When they do come up with something, I could certainly see it possibly working, but that's, it possibly working, and if they come up with something, you know, that's two big ifs right there. So I'm inclined to agree, and in solidarity with my co-host, I'm going to go Lemillion 8 out of 10 times. All that aside, like everything you guys said, but Lemillion, professional hero experience, has taken down, you know, like deadlier villains. I think Dash and Violet Parr and Lemillion, if you put them up against 100 goons, I think they do equally as well. But, you know, like going up against each other, I think it's a pretty bad match for Dash and Violet Park, considering we have an entire scene of Lemillion beating up school-age children in the text. So, you know, it's pretty tough to argue for them, but absolutely a fantastic fight. I would not have had it any other way.
You guys know that as soon as like Lemillion wins, he pulls out like granola bars and orange slices and is like, good job, guys.
Good job, kids.
and then starts giving them like pointers of just like, you could do this and this and this.
and Dash would be like, oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, we should have done that.
Exactly. Dash is going to be like, how can I go so fast? I phase.
Yeah, like, exactly.
He's going to be running up to walls and like trying to like go so fast that he like shoots straight through it. Like, you know, 100%.
His dad, Mr. Incredible, like, would be so pissed off at Lemillion. Because Dash would just be like, try bursting through the walls at the house. Their homeowner's rate would go so high. He'd be like, who is this guy you like portal to, and he like kicked your asses, and now you're trying to like copy him?
Just a bunch of Dash imprints in the wall. Like Looney Tunes style.
Yeah,
exactly. And like, he's definitely gonna make his own homemade like Lemillion visor, like, and be like running through the house like just yelling power. Like,
watch this, Dad, plus ultra.
But I think that sums up the fight for us today. So Lemillion is going to be moving on to the tournament. He is going to be facing the winner of last week's matchup, in which we discussed Dracula versus Bumblebee. So make sure, if you haven't listened to that one, you head back to last week, give it a listen, and so you know who Lemillion's going to be going up against in the next round. We'll be discussing that in a couple months here. But before we wrap things up today, Steve, Chris, I just want to give you guys the floor a minute to talk about who would win and, you know, what you guys have got going on over there.
So you can find us on pretty much wherever you listen to podcasts: iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, iHeartRadio. We also are on all the social medias: Facebook's, Instagram, Twitter. We put a lot of pictures on Instagram that kind of try visualizing what's going on with the fights that we make. We also recently rolled out our website, which is www.whowouldwincast.com. You can check that out. You can listen to all of our episodes there if you would like. You can learn a little bit more about Chris and myself. And then also what we started doing recently is, originally we did our episodes, we used to do Twitter polls, and they worked well for the people who were able to listen weekly on time, but we were slowly realizing that it wasn't fair to new listeners who were joining on and they weren't able to vote on episodes from, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, because Twitter polls only last 7 days, which I don't understand why, but whatever. So we have all of our polls on our website. I convert them all into Google Forms. So even if there are episodes from 4 years ago, you can vote for those episodes, and definitely check us out. We always look forward to having people listen to our show. And Chris, is there anything you want to add about anything?
No, I think you summed it up perfectly.
Oh, thanks, Chris. I appreciate that. But yeah, I mean, we were really thankful and excited when you messaged us. Like we said, this is the first time we've ever been on somebody else's podcast. So we're not only humbled, but we're thankful that it was two very gracious hosts that were able to have an atmosphere that was very civil, fun, and enjoyable to be a part of.
Aww. We are 100%. We are happy to be able to provide that environment. And like, I don't know if I mentioned in the intro while we were recording, but you know, I've listened to your podcast for a long time. And so to have you guys on is really an honor. And I really appreciate you guys taking the time to come, you know, chat with us, you know, because you needed more ridiculousness in your week other than, you know, what you get with your own podcast. And I couldn't recommend our listeners to check out the Who Would Win cast. You know, wherever you find Super Bracket Bros, you almost certainly find Steve and Chris. So definitely check them out. I will let our listeners know to make sure to find us on Instagram and Facebook, and especially on Instagram, because we have started to run our own polls, which only last 24 hours, you know, after posting, and we usually post on Sundays when the episodes drop. So make sure you are taking part, because once we get into the Super 16, we're going to be discussing the results of all those polls, so you can tell us either how very right we were or how very, very wrong we were, because we all missed that time that Dash did go light speed and definitely should have launched Mirio off of Gateway.
It was that
Galaxy,
two and a half so. Times. That's what it was. It was those two and a half times.
It was in the short.
Yes.
Totally
missed
it.
Yeah. It's going to be on the blue, or the, well, I guess the Blu-ray is already out. It's going to be a new spinoff show on Disney Plus or something.
Yeah. But thank you everybody for listening today. Eli, do you have anything else for the people? Nope. Thank you so much for joining us on Super Bracket Bros. On behalf of myself, Jay, and for our fantastic guests, Steve and Chris, and for my co-host, Elia, remember, no true hero is a one-trick pony.